Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi.
Last time I spoke here, I gave a talk about attachment in family life, and particularly about the attachment that parents have to their children. And someone asked me to talk tonight about the attachment that children have to their parents. So that's what I'm going to speak on. The reason for talking about attachment is not to undermine family life at all, but to try to point out how we bring suffering into our life by having unrealistic expectations of what family life can offer us, and also the nature of the relationships we have with our family members. So last time when I was talking about the relationship of children to parents to children, I was mentioning how parents very often see their children as extensions of themselves and as there to fulfill their expectations. Whereas in the Buddhist teaching, each one of us are born according to our karma, and the closest relation that we have is not our parents or our brothers and sisters or our children, but our own karmic inheritance. And so it is only within guidelines, within limits, that we can affect the behaviour of those, even those who are closest to us, particularly parents with their children. If we become too attached, if we think that children are going to fulfill our expectations for them, are going to be the way we want them to be, then very often we'll be disappointed. So looking at attachment is to help us to have a more realistic idea of what we can expect in our close relationships. The Buddha placed a great deal of importance on family life, and many of his teachings are specifically about the reciprocal responsibilities and duties that family members have to each other. But the family, as the Buddha conceived it, had a much wider scope than what we generally think about in modern society. The Buddha's definition of the family was not just the nuclear family, mum, dad and the kids, but it extended to the parents of the mum, dad and the kids, to the generation above. And also it spread widely to the relations on either side, brothers and sisters, cousins, uncles and aunties. This is what we know as the traditional extended family. So when we think about the Buddha's teaching on family life, and if we think that trying to understand how children don't belong to their parents is undermining the importance of family life, then we haven't understood what the Buddha's teaching is about. In fact, the Buddha saw families as the building blocks for healthy individuals and for a healthy society. And just as he said that parents had responsibilities for their children, he also said that children have responsibilities for their parents. And he described parents as being like the earth that supports all the plants and animals. Parents are fundamental to our being here. Even though, as I explained in my last talk, we are born again because of our craving to be here. And the circumstances in which we're born and the parents to whom we're born are according to our karmic inheritance. But the parents to whom we're born provide us with the place that we need. They introduce us to the world. They're our first teachers. And they look after us when we wouldn't survive if they didn't. And so the Buddha said that throughout our life, we have this karmic relationship with our parents, which exists whether we're living with them or not. Whether we're in contact with them or not, even whether they're alive or not. Throughout this life, this relationship exists. And particularly if we want to practice the Buddha's path, then we have to be willing to look at our relationship with our parents and to try to use that relationship as one of the aspects of our practice. Many people have problematic relationships with their parents. They feel that their parents aren't good enough, haven't been kind enough, caring enough, generous enough, intelligent enough, rich enough, all sorts of ways in which parents fail to meet the expectations of their children. And very often in this society, we tend to close off or try to close off our relationship with our parents, and we have a lot of unfinished business with them as a result. And we have to understand that this is unfinished business with our practice for enlightenment. So we can't afford to have any area of our life that we're not willing to look at, even if it's painful. Why are we born with these parents in the first place? As I said, we're born because of our karmic inheritance. So what are we going to learn from these relationships? Whatever we're going to learn are going to be very important for our own spiritual growth. So many changes have taken place in society, not just in recent years, but over the last centuries, since the Industrial Revolution and since family life as it used to exist in the villages and in the towns was disrupted by monumental changes economically and socially in the structure of society. And very often today you'll hear people talking about wanting to go back to old family values, this kind of golden era when families lived together in harmony and everyone got on well and supported each other. Well, that would be lovely if it were really possible, and if it was really so recent that we had that kind of society. But if you just think back to the changes that have taken place, just in this century, just in the last 50 years, we find a lot of reasons why many of us exist today quite adrift from the family that we grew up in, that we were born in. It's no longer the case that people are born and raised in one area and they stay in that place and continue to have relationships with people there throughout their life. There's so much mobility these days, and it has been that way for 100 years, over 100 years. People have been moving away from the hometown, and families have been split up. And now today, we have the situation in the world where people in an affluent country with good education may be born in one town, one country, educated in another, and go to work in yet another. And because of famine and war and all sorts of other conditions in the world, we know that there are millions of refugees who've been uprooted from their home country, from their social network. And so when we're thinking about how many people are adrift from their families, from their places of origin, we can see that this covers millions of people in the world. And then if we look at the way that society these days emphasizes the bond between man and wife. In the past, when people got married, you weren't just really marrying the man or the woman, you were marrying the family of the man and the woman. And very often marriages took place not out of choice, not out of romance, not out of selecting the person you wanted as your partner, but the family selected that person. And not just for the family's benefit, but selecting someone they felt was suited to you, to your temperament, to your needs, to your capacities. And so previously, when someone married, it was a group that was being brought together, the families on each side. And in many parts of the world, that's still the way marriages take place. But today, we find ourselves in a situation where increasingly it's a couple, the man and the woman, who are choosing their lifelong partner, very often without any reference to how that will affect the family on either side. What will be the consequences? And of course you have people marrying across cultures, across nationalities, people from one side of the world marrying someone else on the other side of the world, stretching the family relationships around the globe. And then we also have not only this kind of relationship where individuals are marrying individuals, but the societal expectation is that that bond will be the most important. That's the one that takes precedence. So if you're marrying someone on one side of the world and they want to move to another part of the world, the expectation is that you will go, even if you've got extended family or ties wherever you were living originally. And then we find a situation these days where there are very many divorces. Many couples come together but don't stay together. And then you have not only divorce but remarriage. So multiple families. And each family has a network of relationships. Mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, aunties and uncles. Which one do you pay attention to? Which one do you take care of? Where is your responsibility? You can see all the complications that are present in relationships, in family life these days. generally speaking, people are living to a much longer age. And so now we find that there are people who are looking after their parents. Their parents are in their 90s. People who are looking after them, the daughters and the sons, are in their 60s. And they've got children in their 30s. And they've got grandchildren who are coming along. And maybe they haven't got just one set of grandchildren, they've got two sets of grandchildren. Very often people who want to be responsible for their extended family, for their parents, have a lot of conflicting demands on their time and energy. Very often, even if it's just quite a simple, straightforward family situation, particularly women will find themselves in a situation where they have aging parents who require their attention and support just at the time when they have teenage children or young adults who also require a lot of time and energy and money. And so a lot of conflicting interests, even if you're trying to do the best you can by all parties. So the point I'm trying to make is that it's not easy. Even if you want to fulfill responsibilities to your parents. And the way that society is developing, it's going to become more difficult. And not because individuals don't want to do their duty, don't want to fulfill responsibilities, but all of the pressures that are brought to bear on us as members of society are very difficult to cope with. And in effect, this is one of the Buddha's teachings which is important for us to see in this context, because it emphasizes or reveals how appropriate the Buddha's teaching is, how relevant the Buddha's teaching is to the difficulties we face in the modern age. According to the Buddha's teachings, nothing arises independent of multiple causes and conditions. This is the teaching on codependent arising. And so if we look at the predicament that we find ourselves in this modern time, trying to juggle the demands of family life, we can see it's not just because I don't want to do it. It's not just because I'm not interested. It's because of all of these various causes and conditions producing a situation which is very complex and is not easily addressed without the understanding and the will to do it. And this is where our practice comes in, wanting to do something about it. And making the choice to give priority to particular relationships in our life, to particular responsibilities in our life, out of the myriad of demands that we have to face. Making the conscious choice to value our relationships, particularly with our close family members and particularly with our parents. Just to illustrate how much change has taken place in recent times, I'd just like to read you an extract from something that someone sent me recently. For all those born before 1945, and there are lots of people here born before 1945, but for those of you who aren't, just reflect, this is 50 years. That's not even a lifetime of the lifespan of the average person these days. So when we're trying to get our head around just how complex our situation has become, this can just help us to get a better grasp on it. All those born before 1945. Consider the changes we have witnessed. We were born before television, before penicillin, before polio shots, frozen foods, Xerox, plastic, contact lenses, frisbees, and the pill. We were before credit cards, split atoms, laser beams, and ballpoint pens. Before pantyhose, dishwashers, clothes dryers, electric blankets, air conditioners, and drip-dry clothes. And before anyone walked on the moon. We got married first and then lived together. How quaint can you be? Having a meaningful relationship meant getting along with our cousins. We were before house husbands, day rights, computer dating, dual careers, and commuter marriages. We were before daycare centres, group therapy, and nursing homes. We never heard of FM radio, tape decks, electric typewriters, artificial hearts, word processors, yogurt, or guys wearing earrings. For us, time sharing meant togetherness, not computers or condominiums. A chip meant a piece of wood. Hardware was hardware, and software wasn't even a word. We were certainly not before the difference between the sexes was discovered, but were surely before the sex change. We made do with what we had, and we were the last generation so dumb as to think that you needed a husband to have a baby. So this is a light-hearted way of just trying to get our mind around some of the changes that have taken place in just the last 50 years. So it's no wonder that we find it very demanding, to say the least, to try and fulfill the expectations that we have even of ourselves. And when we think about even the relationships with our neighbours, with our work colleagues, with our employer, with our employees, we see that we live in a time of expendable relationships. Lack of job security, lack of economic stability very often, many, many changes which make us feel that we can give away almost anything because nothing is sure. And so when we hear that the Buddha taught that we should uphold our relationship with our parents as a priority, then we have to ask ourselves, well, does that still apply in this time of expendable relationships? And I'd like to try to show you that the relationship with our parents is fundamental. It's fundamental for our own well-being, for our own place in the world. Because as I said, as it seems obvious, our parents introduce us to the world. They orient us to the world, and they provide a lot of our self-image. So they colour our relationship with the world. Even if we're no longer in an active relationship with them. But even more basically than that, as I said at the beginning of the talk, they provide us with the place to be born, according to our karma. And one of the jobs that we do during our life is to wake up to our own karmic inheritance and also to be able to see our parents as individuals separate from us with their own karmic inheritance. Because as someone said to me when I was talking about giving this talk, they said, yes, parents see their children as extensions of themselves, But children also see parents as an extension of who they are. And children are very often in the situation of constantly trying to be what their parents want them to be, or never becoming an independent person, always expecting that the parent will be there for them. And so from these two sides, we have to work to develop this understanding of ourselves as independent but interconnected with our parents. The first stage of that, the Buddha said, is to go back to our birth. All of us are born from a woman. And I'd like to read you a very powerful piece of writing about birth. The Buddha said one of the aspects of this life which is dukkha, which is unsatisfactory, is birth. It's unsatisfactory because having been born, we've got to go through the whole rigmarole again. Birth, aging, sickness and death. But birth itself is dukkha. We are born in the suffering of our mother. It doesn't matter whether our mother walked out on us the next day. We were born in her suffering. And this is something which we need to reflect on, even if we're no longer in contact with our mother, but so we can start to generate a feeling of gratitude and appreciation towards her for what she did. Birth. By Linda Chrisman. Each one of us owes our life and breath to a woman. To create life on this earth, some woman has opened and has cried. Whether by squatting, by standing, by dancing on all fours, or on her back, whether by scalpel, by breath, by prayer, by song, by grace or by will. Whether at home, in the fields, beside a road, in a hospital, or in the water. Whether by cracking, by slicing, by oozing, by tearing or by pushing. Some woman has opened. Some woman has cried. This I know from my body. This I know from giving birth to my son. Every ascetic, every world leader, every corporate executive, every child, every man and every woman is alive because a woman gave birth. A woman opened to suffering. I never recognized my mother for birthing my life, or respected my mother for her suffering on my behalf. I had never honored my mother for the gift of my breath until I gave birth to my son. For those of you who are mothers know exactly what that's about, but all of us are here as a result of our mother's suffering. So this is a reason why we should always remember our mothers with benevolence, no matter what kind of parent they've been since that time. Where do the fathers fit in? Well, again, many of us have problematic relationships with our fathers. They were very often maybe not the soft one, not the easy one. We've all got our stories. But fathers traditionally have been the providers. That, of course, has changed very dramatically in recent years, and this is one of the changes that we now face in sorting out our relationships, that women are going out into the workforce, and that is changing the dynamics and changing their availability to be the nurturers in the household. But whether our father has been exactly how we wanted them to be, who we wanted them to be, we still, for our own benefit, need to be able to generate a feeling of goodwill and benevolence towards that person who has been so central to our life. To generate that feeling of respect for another being struggling, just as we're struggling with the ups and downs of this life. If we can't do that, then we close off a part of ourself. So opening up to our Father is a part of opening up to the totality of who we are and what this life has been, so we can see it, warts and all. If we make the determination to try to develop respect and benevolence towards our parents, then we are creating new conditions in the cause and effect chain of dependent origination. We are producing the world through our actions, through our reactions. And if we can generate a positive state of mind, and if that can lead us to change our behavior towards our parents, then we are making that a possibility for others. And particularly we're making it a possibility for the young people who are coming up. When I look around, I see that there aren't so many young people here. And it's interesting, when I said that I was going to talk about this topic, someone said to me, "Oh, well, you're talking to the wrong age group, because they're all too old now." And I reminded this person, well, they all still had mothers and fathers at one time, and many of you I know still do, and many of you have very elderly parents. And so it's not too late. But also it's important for us to realize that how we behave, how we talk about our parents, what priority we give to them in our life, is going to have a tremendous impact on the young people whom we are involved with, our own children particularly. If we don't watch out, we're going to create conditions in our life for our children not to have respect or benevolence towards us, to see us as one of the expendable relationships in their life. There's a nice story about this from Sri Lanka, a traditional story that's told to encourage the awareness of cause and effect. This is a story about a farmer. The farmer lived with his wife, made his living by growing his crops, feeding his family with that, and selling the surplus in the market. And by and by, the farmer and his wife had a family, and the children grew up on the farm, with the father working very hard to grow his crops, to have enough to sell at the market to feed the family. And as time went by, the children in the family got married and moved away, except for the eldest son. The eldest son was going to inherit the farm, so he'd been working on the farm throughout his growing up days, little by little, until he also got married but brought his family back to live in the ancestral home. And as time went by, he took over a few more of the jobs on the farm, and the old farmer's wife died, and a few years went by with the two of them, the father and the son, working the farm. Until eventually the father, the old father, thought to himself, well, I've been doing this for years now. I'm exhausted. I need a break. What I'll do is I'll hand over the farm entirely to my son. And he can make the decisions and he can be the one who has to keep the farm going. And so he did that. And he retired to a quiet spot on the veranda. And at first his son was very pleased that he had inherited the farm and that he had now the power to make the decisions about what was going to be done there. He liked being in charge. But after a while he started to notice that he was doing all the work. And he started to resent the fact that while he was toiling in the field, his father was enjoying his quiet place on the veranda. And so resentment started to arise towards his little. This revealed itself in lots of little ways. Now instead of the father, the grandfather, getting the first of the food and the best of what was grown, he had to wait for now the head of the household to have his share. And the way in which he was treated by the rest of the family also started to deteriorate. And this was marked by the fact that the young farmer's wife kept an old cracked plate, and the grandfather's food was always served on the old cracked plate, just to show him where he stood in the family now that he wasn't working hard. And little by little, time went by, things didn't get any better, and eventually the old farmer died. And when the family were coming back from the funeral, and the young farmer was gathering up his father's few possessions to get rid of them, he noticed his young son picking up the broken plate and carefully putting it aside. And he said to his young son, "Hey, you won't need that anymore now that grandfather's gone." And the son said, "Oh yes, I'm putting this aside. I'll need it in the future so that you can use it when I'm the farmer and you're the grandfather sitting in the corner just doing nothing." This is a very simple story, and the fact that it's a traditional story points out that though we might have this rosy image of village life in a place like Sri Lanka, we can see that this story is necessary to remind people even there, hey, take care of your elders. It's not new. But now, we need to be really consciously aware of it because we want to practice the Buddha's path. And because we are challenged by the conditions in which we find ourselves living in this day and age. If we don't develop wholesome relationships with those who are closest to us, how can we hope to develop wholesome relationships with those people who aren't so fundamental to our being here? This is why the Buddha said that family life is the cornerstone, not only of society, but of a happy individual. And when we look around today, we can see that there are many children who are referred to as throwaway kids. They don't have any anchorage point in their life because they don't have any anchorage point in a family for whatever reasons, all of the reasons that I mentioned to you. And if we consider what society is becoming with just the social and economic changes, we can see that there will be very few anchorage points in the future. Which country do we belong to? Where do we work? Where do we stay employed for long enough for it to be an anchorage point? Many of you are already experiencing this, having moved from your country of origin, often through various other countries, before you've settled here in Australia. So this anchorage point needs to be ultimately not out there, but in our own heart. And this is what the Buddha's teaching is always pointing towards. Whatever we do in the world comes back, rebounds in our own heart. The world and our heart is not separate. And how we act is going to have an effect on the world in which we work and which we live, in which we bring up our families. So in respect to our parents, how do we heal the relationships that we have? Sometimes we have to work very hard, first of all, to be able to see ourselves as owners of our karma, the products of our conditioning, subject to the conditions of our life. We have to work on ourselves first before we have the strength of mind and the stability of mind to then be able to turn that same inquisitive, interested, reflective mind onto our parents. Why are they like they are? What causes and conditions, what circumstances, what factors were operating in their life to produce the kind of people that they were, to produce the kind of people that they are, who I have to interact with now? Learning to accept our parents, learning to forgive our parents, so that we can stand separately from our parents while maintaining that interconnectedness, which acknowledges them as a significant part of our world. Even if we're never able to go and do for them, at least to have an attitude of benevolence. Not only an attitude of benevolence, but the wish not to do them harm. Feeling of compassion. So that how we live our life, the decisions we make, the choices we make, instead of making them as though we were isolated and independent, we take into consideration what impact it will have on our parents. And if we can't do anything to uplift them, at least try not to do anything that will harm them, that will cause them unhappiness. In this way, at least, we fulfill our debt to our parents. The Buddha said, in fact, we can never fully repay the debt that we owe to our parents, not even if we look after them and do everything that is required for their well-being, for their material well-being.
what we can do to repay the debt to our parents is, if they are miserly, to try to encourage them to be generous. If they live an immoral life, to try to encourage them to live with integrity. If they don't know the teaching, to introduce them to the teaching for their own benefit. Now, it may be impossible for us to do any of these things for our parents, but the way in which we can best show them what the Buddha's teaching is about is by living it in our own life, being a living example of the Buddha's teaching. And we may never talk about Dharma. We may never talk about the fact that now I understand why you were like you were. Now I forgive you for what you did. But in our own heart, we know that that's the work that we've been doing for our own benefit and also for theirs. If we can establish this kind of relationship in our own heart, then we have a point of anchorage in this very complex, speedy and changing world. And that will be of benefit for ourselves and also for everyone that we have contact with, particularly those young people who are looking to us for some kind of guidance, some kind of help on how to manage to live in this day and age. So I encourage you all to reflect on these words and to see that the relationship you have with your parents is fundamental and is one that you need to address if it's one of the problem areas of your life. May this teaching be of benefit to all of us, and may the merit of this teaching help us all to attain Nibbana. Does anyone have any questions that they'd like to ask or comment? The question is how to explain the great grief that kids go through when they put a parent in a nursing home. This again is a complex situation. Many of the situations that people face have different factors involved. And there can be decisions to put parents into a nursing home which are made out of great compassion and trying to do what is best for the parent. And there are decisions about putting parents in nursing homes which are done out of selfishness. And so every situation is going to be different. And I don't think that it's, and I'm certainly not trying to say that there is a hard and fast rule that parents should always be looked after in a particular way, that is always kept at home or always have them living with you or whatever, because sometimes for the proper care of the parent, a nursing home is the best situation. And this applies to people who have husbands or wives or even children who also have to be cared for in a nursing home because their physical or mental condition makes it impossible for them to be maintained at home, and actually they get better care in the nursing home. But the grief is it's a loss. Losing the parent, putting them into a nursing home is in a sense a loss. It's really acknowledging a dramatic change in that parent's state of being in the world. And if you have a lot of love and attachment for that parent, there'll be sadness to see that parent in that situation. And then there's the expectation, perhaps unrealistic, that this parent should be able to be physically well and not cause so much suffering in my life, or that I should be able to prevent my parents' suffering in this way. And this is one of the reasons why we have to reflect on the fact that each one of us is the owner of our own karma, and that includes our parents. That no matter what we may do to try to make their life easeful and happy. It will depend on what they have made of their life as well. So very often, for example, you'll come across people who are very miserable, and they've practiced misery all their life. They've never taken the trouble or had the opportunity or tried to generate positive states of mind, to see the happy things rather than the sad things, to appreciate the good things rather than to dwell in the negative. And so that person has constantly throughout their life been making a particular kind of karma. And it doesn't matter how much effort you put into trying to cheer them up and make their life different, it's going to be not possible because of what they've cultivated throughout their life. And so, again, with parents having to go into nursing homes, that's maybe something that you have no real control over, no real opportunity to change, because it's their karmic inheritance. So I think you have to always look at your own motivation, and grief can also be one of the points in our experience where we see the suffering in life, where we actually touch the dukkha that the Buddha was talking about, the fact that some things just are this way and can't be changed, and the fact that we're going to lose those who are closest to us, or that our relationships are going to change dramatically in ways that we don't want. This is part of that dukkha.